Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark. Amy is the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul Books. She has been a frequent guest, and every time when Amy is here, we learn something new and heartwarming. So that's just wonderful. Today, we'll be discussing Chicken Soup latest edition, Just Us Girls. I have no idea how I'm going to fit into this, but I'm going to give it my best shot for the next hour. So good morning, Amy. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio.
Good morning. I guess I'm going to treat you like one of us girls just for the next hour.
It should be Just Us Girls and Johnny.
Oh, maybe I'll explain about girls to you. I'll explain to you what women think. But I don't know, you might stop listening, like my husband. I was talking to him this morning, and he stopped listening, and then a minute later he asked me a question. I said, I just told you all of that. So I don't know. I'll just keep talking if it appears like you're not listening.
That's good. That sounds good to me. I would just say, uh-huh, yes, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good, very good, great. I'm with you. Chicken Soup for the Soul, Just Us Girls, 101 Stories About Friendship for Women of All Ages is a wonderful read. The book is perfect, actually, for people who are looking for ways to increase their circle of friends. And I believe the book is really good for strengthening existing ones as well. So congratulations for that.
Thanks. It's a book that I was inspired to make this book because so many people I know were saying, I need to make new friends. Because friends go by the wayside or you break up with friends. And so I knew women of all ages who were saying, I need to make new friends. And it's hard. It's like dating. And so first we were going to make a book called The New Friends Project. Mm-hmm. And we started collecting stories for that. But then we got so many stories that were about women strengthening existing friendships or just telling us really hilarious stories about adventures with their friends that we decided to expand the book and call it Chicken Soup for the Soul, Just Us Girls, but then have a heavy emphasis in the book on how do you go and get new friends, expand your circle of friends, and strengthen your relationships with the friends that you have. It's a constant need that people have. And I think that this time of year, January, February, this is when everybody's approaching their lives with new resolves. And one of the things that women often resolve is to get in touch with their old friends and find some new friends. This is the time of year we reevaluate our social lives.
Very interesting. One of the things in reading the book that I gather is that we call everybody friends, but really we have friends, and then we have friends, and then we have acquaintance, if that makes sense. Like, there's several layers of what we call, quote-unquote, as friends.
I agree with you. I always think to myself, a true friend is one you would keep up with even if you moved. And everyone else is an acquaintance. If you wouldn't keep up with somebody, let's say you left your town and you moved 100 miles away, if you wouldn't keep up with that person, even if it was just once a year, an email, a phone call, visiting them when you went back to the town, then they're not a true friend. They're just an acquaintance. They're just a neighbor. The friends are the ones you want to keep in your life, even when it becomes less convenient to do so.
Very true. Why are relationships between women so important?
Well, I think women tend to be very home-oriented, and so home is like our silo. You know, we're home, we're hunkered down, we're putting every available minute into caring for our spouses or significant others, caring for our children if they're at home, caring for the home itself, because most of the burden of that falls on the woman, whether it's the cleaning, the laundry, or, you know, arranging to have a workman come and fix something, paying the bills, et cetera. But we're really working so hard on that silo, that home. Then when we go to work, if we work outside the home, again, we're hunkered down with walls around us working on something there. It's very easy to become isolated. And even though we love our coworkers and we love our husbands and we love our children, we need a play date once in a while. We need somebody our own age and gender to go and talk to. And so we have to force ourselves to do it because it always seems like there's more work to do or more caring for our direct family members to do than we don't have time to see our friends. And so we have to really force ourselves to go out there and make those connections with friends because we love it when we are with our friends because we have so much in common. We can talk about stuff. We're on the same wavelength. I always feel so renewed and energized after I spend a couple of hours with a friend. It's worth forcing myself to make that time available to be with that friend.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I find that the book talks about friends being cheerleaders in your life and in some ways a wonderful guide when you're actually rolling, and then, of course, you know, they help you to kind of stay on course in many ways. How do you think women can go about fostering better friendship with new friends?
I think that you have to put a lot of effort into it. I mean, it just doesn't happen naturally. You have to make a list of your friends and say, I'm going to have lunch with every one of these friends over the next 3 months. You have to write down their birthdays and acknowledge their birthdays. You have to actually put effort into it. It's a relationship, you know,
right.
And then if you're going to try to get new friendships, that's a lot of work too, because you actually have to basically go on dates, right? You have to meet somebody and say, oh, we should have lunch sometime. And then you go on a date and you try each other out for the lunch and you see if you click. And then if you click, maybe you have another lunch. And then you got to see if the husbands are going to click so that you know whether they can be couple friends or whether she can just be a lunch friend.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be shy. And we have so many stories in the book by women who were shy and then just forced themselves to approach someone, and they were so rewarded by doing so, by approaching someone and asking if she wanted to have lunch or by joining a group. I mean, I know I'm shy.
Mm-hmm.
So many of us are shy that we're afraid to go and try that new friendship. So it really takes a lot of work, but you read this book and it really motivates you to do that hard work because the rewards are so excellent.
Right. And one thing, too, though, never say, let's have lunch, and never call or arrange for something, then that's not what it is. If you really want to have meaningful friendship, meaningful conversations, then you got to do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah, and if somebody asks you, let's have lunch, and you already know you're not going to want to be their friend, then you just say, oh, that's a great idea, and then you never set it up. But yeah, if you want to set it up, you will definitely be sending the wrong message if you don't go through with it.
Right. Well, tell us about the diverse group of women who contributed to Just Us Girls.
Well, we didn't really say anything about, you know, who we were looking for to contribute. Mm-hmm. We did say we didn't really want it to be like a teen book.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a 14-year-old girl, but her story was so good it deserved to be in there with the adults. But it's mainly college age all the way through elderly women, and we have young mothers who, you know, make new friends through other, you know, through mothers groups. We have church-going women who make friends through church. We have athletes who make friends through being on teams. We have single women who make friends with other single women, and they're of all ages because, you know, a widow who's 65, 70, 75, she may go out and look for a new group of friends once she's a single instead of part of a couple.
Mm-hmm.
So we go from, I would say, 14 to 84, you know, and we have all different kinds of women. And then we have stories about friendships between women who are 20 or 30 years apart, women who have completely different backgrounds, women who live 2,000 miles apart from each other. So there is a huge diversity in the kinds of friendships in the book and in the way that those friendships were created. So it's really fun. It's 101 stories that are all different from each other. So you won't read the same kind of story twice. It's really 101 completely different stories, which makes it a lot of fun. I had so much fun reviewing the book prior to this interview and mm-hmm. reacquainting myself with the stories because I hadn't read all of them, you know, for a couple of months, and I had a really mm-hmm. good time yesterday rereading the book.
Wonderful. What is the biggest takeaway for readers?
I think the biggest takeaway is that you have to get yourself out there, whether you're looking for new friends or you're looking to keep your friends. You got to get yourself out there. You have to make an effort, and it's absolutely worth it because having female friends so enriches your life.
Right, right. One thing people need to understand also is that I'm using the word work, and you had mentioned that work as well. Friendship is work. Any relationship takes work. You can't just sit back and wait for things to happen to you. It is cooperative type of relationship in the sense that it takes both to invest in it.
That's true. And if somebody doesn't seem to be putting effort into the relationship, you'll notice it and you'll be less likely to want to be friends with them. So you have to be clearly showing that you're doing the work. You really do. And because people want to believe that you're putting effort into it. But all of these stories really do involve people putting effort into it. So it's good. And you know what else I love is that people make their friendships in such unusual places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had some really interesting stories about unique kinds of friendship opportunities. Like one woman, she's actually one of our senior editors. Her husband is just crazy about Corvettes. He collects Corvettes, and he really wanted to join the Corvette Club, and she did not want to join it, but then she reluctantly did to be nice to her husband. And it turned out that there were wonderful women married to the other men who had forced their wives to join the Corvette Club, and the women ended up taking over the Corvette Club and making it less car-oriented and just a general social thing. So they drive their cars to wine tastings and theater, and they go on expeditions together. They've driven up to Canada. They've driven from California all the way to the East Coast. And my friend and our editor actually ended up becoming the president of the Corvette Club, which is pretty funny. And then she was succeeded by another woman. But, I mean, she said, I never expected I would make friends in the Corvette Club, but she did.
Mm-hmm.
And we have somebody who made great friends in a cycling group and another in a Latin dance class, and women who made great friends through unfortunate circumstances, through online, you know, grieving support mm-hmm. groups, grieving for lost spouses or even more horribly lost children. A lot of women make friends with other women who are writers. And, of course, since our stories are written by writers, we get a lot of stories from writers, and women who write make really good friendships with each other, even if they're across the country from each other and just see each other once a year at a writer's conference. But anyway, we saw a lot of different places
mm-hmm.
that women would make friendships with each other. And so that was really fun. It was basically like you should really keep your eyes open for these opportunities because you never know. You might find your best friend in one of these unusual places.
Right. The biggest challenge is, are we able to open our hearts and our minds and just be aware, because these friends are out there right in front of us sometimes. And so we may have to do the first initiation of meeting them and extending our hands out there.
And people are so shy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, women are just, we're so shy. And then we don't realize, well, that other woman over there who looks interesting, who looks like she might be a good friend, well, she's shy too.
Right.
So just because you're eyeing her and you're thinking, wow, we might be really compatible, it doesn't mean that she's going to approach you. You have
right.
to approach her because she's just as shy as you are, and someone has to go first. So many women in these stories basically talked about how they just mustered up their courage and just mm-hmm. went for it, and it worked out great.
Wonderful. I've selected, as usual, several stories from the book as talking points for this morning. These are wonderful stories, and these are ones that I felt they're interesting. They are from a diverse background. Some are funny, and some are basically, like you were talking about, in moments where we do need a true friend to be right beside us. So can you tell us about them and their authors?
Sure. The first story in the book, and I always lead off with a story that I really love, it's in a chapter called The New Friend Project. And, of course, as I told you, I had started Chicken Soup for the Soul just as girls, thinking that I was going to call it The New Friend Project, and then we expanded it to all stories about friendship. So I still really liked this concept of The New Friend Project, so I made that the name of a chapter. And the writer of this story, the story is called Wanted, Mom Friends. Her name's Melissa Zipzal, and she had a new baby, and she was really lonely, and so she went to the library, and she saw there was a playgroup for babies and their mothers, but she was afraid to join it because she didn't think she would know anyone. And, of course, the whole point was she was looking for new friends, so excuse me if you don't know anybody, that's the whole reason you're supposed to join, right? So eventually that occurred to her, and so the next week she gathered up her courage and she went back, and she did join the group, and she ended up making great friends. And she says in her story, I'm still amazed how one small act of bravery made such a huge difference in my level of happiness. And then she advises, go ahead and strike up a conversation with the mom at the next park bench. Seek out other moms at your church or your child's school and start your own playgroup or book club. And, you know, this doesn't just pertain to moms. This could be you're 60 years old and you're visiting your mom at a nursing home. Your mom is 85. And you strike up a friendship with another 60-year-old woman who's there visiting her 85-year-old mom. You know, I mean, you just have to be courageous and talk to people everywhere because you might find great friends that way.
Right,
so,
right.
So I loved that story because that was very inspirational.
What you talked about is basically, we don't realize this, but we're in situations where we're there because what we need is the support. And it's sort of a familiar ground for us as well. So people that are there share the same common interests already.
That's true. I made some of my best friends through my original baby playgroup, you know, and through the kids when they were really young, and those women are still my really good friends today. And it's interesting, our children ended up being best friends too.
Yeah, yeah. And you're just building this wonderful network from there. So that's just wonderful. The other one in the New Friend Project, The Marriage Class, I thought that was really interesting by Diane Stock. This is kind of sort of like a classic kind of thing. That's the way I look at it. I'll let you tell the story.
Well, she didn't really have any issues in her marriage at all. And she said to her husband she wanted to go to this marriage class. And he said, but we're fine. Why do we have to go to the class? She said, I just want to go to it. And I think she really had this intuition that she was going to make friends there, and that's really what she was looking for. And so she basically, you know, asked this other woman there if she would like to get together sometime. And that woman smiled and looked relieved as if she'd been thinking the same thing but had been shy and didn't want to ask. And they ended up making great friends there. And Diane Stark said that now she's not only growing closer to her husband through this marriage class at her church, but she's also growing closer to many new girlfriends. It just shows you really have to work at it. The class was ostensibly for people to work on their marriages, but really she was there working on her the friendship side of her life.
Right. It's all about relationships, relationship with friends or relationship with your significant other in this case.
Yep, it takes work, but it's all worth it. But, yeah, everything takes work in life, right? All these relationships.
Yes, it certainly does. The next one is the section called My Group. By the way, I love the way you have broken down all the different sections so that people can go directly to the areas that really speaks to them. And this particular one is My Group. It's interesting. You just mentioned a little bit about when you were having small kids, and this is a story about pregnant gals by Crescent LaMonaco.
Yeah, so Crescent LaMonaco, she's the daughter of Barbara, she's the daughter-in-law of Barbara LaMonaco, who's our editor who became the president of the Corvette Club. And mm-hmm. Crescent is her daughter-in-law, and she's a terrific writer. And she got pregnant, totally surprised by it, at age 39, her first child.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, she didn't have any, like her friends who had kids, their kids were already, you know, preteens or teenagers.
She started
her own baby group, you know, looking for other mothers she could be friends with. And she put together a group with 12 members. And then after they had their babies, six of the members still continued to be extremely close. And they see each other every week now. They babysit for each other. They grocery shop for each other. Their kids all have play dates together. And so here she created a group from scratch, and it has become such an important part of her life and her husband's life, too, because it was one of those cases, and this usually happens, where you end up liking the husband also, and the husbands like each other, and then and now you have some new couple friends as well as a new female friend.
Right. That's important, too, because sometimes if the wife gets along so well and then the husband don't, I'm sure that put a tremendous strain on the relationship, or the friendship in this case.
Those are the lunch-only friends. Those are the friends you see for lunch. And you can't say, well, our husbands really have nothing to talk about, or my husband thinks your husband talks about himself 90% of the time, or whatever the situation is. So you just have to try to always have lunch together and never be available for dinner and hope they don't notice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not much else you can do about it.
This next story is wonderful, Finding New Valentines by Cynthia Menderhall. Believe it or not, Valentine's is just almost around the corner in a couple of weeks or so. Well, about 3 weeks.
This is such a good story because this is a brilliant idea. And I should have thought of this when I was divorced from my first husband and before I remarried. I remember a really lonely Valentine's Day, and I had another friend who was getting divorced then, and I had another friend who was already divorced. Actually, and another friend who was already divorced.
Oh,
they're all
wow.
divorced. And I should have done this. This woman was so smart. She got together all her friends who were single or single because they were divorced, but anyway, single for some reason, and she had a Valentine's night dinner for all her friends, and she made it really nice, and she put a rose at the place, at each person's place setting. They all dressed up. They had an elegant dinner together. They all supported each other, made each other feel confident, you know, instead of sitting home lonely watching some movie, you know, with Susan Sarandon bravely dying of some disease on the Hallmark Channel or whatever. They didn't do that. They went out and had a fun time with each other, and they all agreed it was their best Valentine's Day ever. I thought that was a brilliant idea. There's still time to pull that together, everyone.
Yeah. Well, again, it's one of those things. Sometimes, I guess, commercialization, you know. You look at Valentine's Day where you have to have this boy-girl thing. If you're single, you don't have anyone around. You're looking at, oh, my gosh. I mean, it's kind of depressing. But then when you have wonderful friends, in this case, girlfriends, to come over and enjoy each other's company and celebrate, there's nothing wrong with that.
It's wonderful. I really thought it was a brilliant idea.
And let's see, the next one is Down the Block. That's kind of interesting. This is, of course, it's A Friend in Need is a Friend Indeed. So it's just a wonderful story. The title of the article is Friends in Dark Places by Schwanelli Ellison.
So she's one of our regular writers, and she had something really horrible happened, but it all worked out just fine, and actually her son wrote about it for our Miracles book. But her son, who was 20, was in a cave with his friends. You know, I don't know. I'm claustrophobic. I could never do this. But they go into caves and roam around, and her son got caught, like, head down in a crevice, was completely stuck. And the friends went to get help, and there were dozens of rescuers, you know, all the rescue teams were there, the professionals, and nobody, they couldn't get him out. they needed oxygen to go down into the cave to try to get him out. He didn't have any oxygen, but the workers needed oxygen. That's how bad this was. Mm-hmm. And he was stuck for something like 20 hours. So anyway, she got the call, you know, that her son was stuck in there. And then she talks in the story about how her friends rallied around her and, you know, came and sat with her, and she had their support all the time. And she's a very religious woman, and her friends were all from church, and they were all praying together. And she just talks about how it was so amazing that these friends came together and helped her through. As it turned out, and it's not in this book, but it's in our Miracles book that you and I are going to talk about in a couple of months, because it's not out yet, her son, this was so fascinating, he had just given up hope, and nobody could get him out, and then he just started praying and praying and praying, and all of a sudden he just came loose. And when the next shift of rescuers came back to get him out, they found him sitting there on a rock waiting for them. And it was just a miracle. But he got out that way. And no one understood how it could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this family writes for us a lot. Chanel wrote, she writes for a lot of our books, and then her son Logan wrote for our Miracles book that's coming out. But anyway, this was a great example of why that investment in time is so important, because your friends are there for you when you need them.
Yeah. The wonderful thing about it is that sometimes the most comforting energy comes from someone who is kind of like slightly detached from the situation in a way. There's family support, and then you have someone that's close to you who are there. I don't know how to explain it, but I think, Amy, you understand what I'm talking about. Like, you need to have that little detachment, and then they're able to see things differently as well, don't you think?
I think so, because also when you're the mother, and this is happening in your own family,
yeah,
you're trying to support your husband through it. You're trying to support your other children through it. You're trying to support your son, you know, through maybe electronic communications if they have some kind of speakers down, you know, to him in the cave or whatever. And so you're giving out a lot of support when you actually just need it. But when your friends give you support, you don't have to give anything back. You could just be a receiver during that moment of need. And I think that is very nice.
Yeah, yeah. That's wonderful. The next one is in the section, It Works. And this is wonderful. It sort of kind of reflects back what you talked about earlier in terms of writing conferences and so forth. Bonding Over Books by Jenny Ivey.
Yeah, she's one of our regular writers, too, and she used to work in a library. She realized that she was having these fascinating conversations with book enthusiasts of all ages, from, you know, teens to elderly, and she thought to herself, why don't I just create a book group from all of these fabulous patrons at the library? So she started a group with seven of the library patrons. And the oldest person at the meeting was an 85-year-old retired nurse, and the youngest was a 16-year-old high school student. And this was such an unlikely combination of people. The 16-year-old had those facial piercings, but she was reading three or four books a week. She was very intellectual, but she really looked scary. And then you have the 85-year-old lady who's the retired nurse, and then you had everyone else in between. Well, those seven people who were separated in age by basically 70 years,
right,
became such good friends. The high school student began giving the 85-year-old a ride to and from the meetings because the 85-year-old couldn't drive anymore. The two men in the group became fishing buddies. Everyone in the group started helping everyone else in the group. They all became friends and all bonded through their shared love of books and through their discussions about books. And this was one of many stories where we did have people of completely different ages becoming friends with each other, which is really nice. You know, people 20, 30 years apart in age becoming the best of friends.
I chose this story because of the richness of friendship. I think this story sort of epitomizes what the essence of Just Us Girls is all about, where if we approach friendship wide open like a blank canvas, anything could happen.
Yeah, that's one of the lessons from the book. Don't overlook somebody because you think, well, this is not an obvious fit, because some of the richest friendships come from being engaged with somebody who is very different from you and exposes you to different points of view, different activities. You might all of a sudden find that you're going rock climbing, which you never thought you would have done before, or you're reading books you never would have read before, or you're going to church, which you never would have done before. But we have a lot of stories about women who end up in very unlikely combinations and how it really works so well for them. And I think that's great. I have a chapter called Second Looks,
yes,
which is basically about taking a second look at that person who you thought, you know, wasn't a natural fit for you.
Right, right. That's wonderful. Before we get to second look, there's one section called Taking the Plunge, and this is kind of fun, What Mommy Learned at Playgroup by Sherry Zeck.
Yeah, so this woman, she talks about this friend of hers who she finds out has breast cancer, and then she talks about how she met this friend, and it was through a mom's group again, which is such a key way of making friends. My mother was in a rehab home a few months ago because she was in a car accident, so she needed to go for orthopedic rehab for a few weeks. She ran into another 80-something woman there. I had played with this woman's son when I was, you know, 3 years old, and these two women had been great friends way back then through the little kids playing together, and they just struck up again their friendship at this rehab, this nursing home, and ate every meal together. I was thinking, oh, my gosh, this is like high school. I'd go to visit my mother, and there she was chatting away with her friend from 50 years ago and just kind of gesturing me away like, I don't need you, you know. these friendships formed through the little kids are incredible friendships that last for decades. And so, yeah, so Sherry Zeck in this story talked about how the friendships that she made ended up extending way beyond the weekly meetings with the other moms, and how even her husband learned to appreciate the group and understood that how a few hours of spending time with these girls each week would, quote, turn his tired, grumpy wife into a pleasant woman. He didn't know how that would happen, but he knew that it worked. And she says, one night of laughter with friends always gave me the extra boost I needed to tackle life's troubles. And I think that that is something that we all feel when we're with friends. We really come out of a meeting with friends feeling energized and ready to go back into those silos I talked about, the home silo,
right,
or the work silo. Go back to that other life where there are no friends, but you are doing all of your daily obligations. You feel so energized by having had a couple of hours with a friend. It's a play date. It's a play date for grown women. Just, I always used to say to my children, you know, moms need play dates too.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things about friendship is that friends, the true friends, are non-judgmental. And we need that because we just need to air everything out.
Or we're feeling guilty about something and the friend says, are you kidding? We all do that.
Yeah.
We've all forgotten to send our kids' permission slip to school, or we've all forgotten our husband's birthday. Well, I haven't done that. But, you know, whatever it is, you know, they're always supportive. It's true.
Yeah, very different. Well, to that section, I thought it's really cool, Second Looks, and I chose this particular one because I thought it's really cute in a way. The Atheist and the Preacher's Wife by Laurie Zanka.
Yeah, her description of this woman who she met, I wouldn't have been her friend either. She was this. So Laurie is the wife of a preacher, and she moved to a new town, and she met somebody at work who had the piercings, had a foul mouth. She was always swearing all the time. She had a bad temper, but they did work together. And then Laurie realized walking home from work that this woman lived right near her. So they actually started to talk to each other, and they bonded over their shared interest in buying vintage things at, you know, those thrift shops. And they've also bonded over the fact that they both disliked their jobs. And soon they were inseparable, even though one of them was the preacher's wife and one of them was a complete atheist who never wanted to go to church. And they just put the religious difference aside and never discussed it. And
right.
they just concentrated on what they had in common. And they ended up moving away from each other. And yet they're my definition of true friends, because they kept in
right.
touch. And each Christmas they mail each other gifts, treasures they found at thrift shops in their new towns. So that was a great example of why you shouldn't just dismiss someone as a person, as a potential friend. You should give everyone a chance, because you never know what treasure you're going to find if you're a little open-minded.
Right. Well, friends don't change friends. What they do is that they embrace that person and they focus on the commonality that they have and enhance each other from that perspective.
That's true.
This is just a wonderful story that focuses on something like that. The next one is Adventures with the Ghost, The Friendship Tree by Davika Jones. This is kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, this was funny because this woman was newly married, and she and her husband disagreed on what kind of Christmas tree they should get. She wanted an artificial one because she didn't want to cut down a tree. But her husband really wanted a real tree. So they compromised on buying a live tree that would continue to grow instead of a cut-down tree. So they found a nursery, and they got this little tree that was called a Norfolk Island pine and supposedly did well indoors. And it was little. It was like 10 inches high, you know, like a little potted plant. And they kept the tree, and then 3 years later, they were moved to California, and the movers said they weren't allowed to take the tree into California because you know how you're not allowed to bring
mm-hmm.
plants or anything into California because they're very protective of the agricultural industry there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she had to leave the tree with a friend, and she was pretty upset because she had been keeping the tree alive for 3 years. So then she separated from her husband, and she got the tree back, and she had the tree with her. And then she ended up having to move, and she had to leave the tree with a friend because she couldn't fit the tree, which was big by now, into her new apartment. And so she finally talked to her friend who had kept the tree for her when she moved to California, and her friend made a confession to her years after she had cared for the tree. She said, "I didn't have the heart to tell you it had died, so I kept talking about it while you were in California. When you came back, I panicked, and I went out and found another Norfolk pine that looked like it was 3 years older than one you had left with me." So all of those years she had been nurturing the wrong tree because her friend had never wanted to confess it to her. And I just thought that it was really, really cute.
Yeah.
So that's what that story was about.
That's what friends do, though, you see. They want to make sure that you're happy.
Yeah, and it's really funny that her friend eventually confessed to her it wasn't the same tree after all.
The next one is Distant and Close. The title of the article is Women of Letters by Christy Paxton, and this is a wonderful story as well.
So we got a lot of stories in the book from women who have really, really good friends who they never see because they either met at some conference or something and then went back to their hometowns distant from each other, and they're only friends now via email, or they're women who had never met in person because the whole friendship was based on emails. And this woman was 54 years old and was going to meet her pen pal, who she had been corresponding with through email for a couple of years. They had originally, quote, met through email when they had both submitted stories to an AARP publication, and they were both published by AARP online but not in print. And they were, you know, discussing that with each other via email. So they kept emails going back and forth between Iowa and New York. And then finally, this woman, Christy, was going to New York to visit her daughter, and she was going to meet her pen pal for the first time. And so they met, and now they see each other once in a while whenever Christy goes to New York. And they're an unlikely pair. One is a young African-American woman. One is a middle-aged white woman from Iowa. And here they are, the two of them, the best of friends, united through their writing. So I thought that that was a really great story. And another example of how people form friendships these days through the power of the Internet.
Mm-hmm. It's just beautiful because they kept in touch. And, you know, we don't spend that much time writing anymore in so many ways. Because when you write, there's something special. You concentrate, you put your time in. I think we express ourselves, our inner feelings, even when we talk. But there's something special about writing. It just sort of gets you down on paper, your thoughts and everything else. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's true. You organize your thoughts more when you write, and you actually tend to share more. You reveal more in your writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because writing is cathartic. And I would guess that people who start relationships this way through writing actually share more with each other than women who might have started in person, because you might not be as willing to reveal some personal, intimate information about yourself if you're looking at the other person. But doing it through writing, you really feel a little bit safer.
Right, right. The next topic is actually the right stuff, which is really cool. And the article is Waltzing with Matilda by Linda Jett.
Yeah, so this is another writer. And, I mean, women do love to write. And these days with the Internet, there are so many more opportunities to share your writing with the public, even if it's published just on a blog or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But these women met at a writer's conference, and then they kept the friendship going after that. And they helped to challenge each other as people to keep doing their writing. But also what this writer, Linda Jett, says is that not only did her friend Dawn challenge her in her writing, you know, and encourage her to power through any rejection letters that she got, but she says that Dawn challenged her as a person, too, because Linda says that she was a very home-oriented person. She never really liked to stray out of her small town, whereas her friend Dawn had traveled all over the world. And so she said that Dawn has challenged her to live more adventurously, do more things, see more places. And they've been friends now for the 2 years since they met at a writing workshop. And Dawn, and Linda says, it's funny to think all this came from a decision to sit at the same table at a writing workshop. They just randomly sat together at a table, and this great friendship came about as a result between two very different people.
Very interesting. What happened in this story, what you just brought up just now, is really cool, because a lot of times, and you and I have been to meetings and conventions and whatnot and so forth and conferences where somehow, somewhere along the line, we tend to gravitate towards the people that we know. And what this story does is that it forces you to think about, well, should I sit with someone else that I don't know? And maybe I can forge something new and different.
Yeah, and if you're a writer, you should be trying to expand your horizons, meet new people,
mm-hmm.
have new experiences, because it will make your writing so much richer.
Mm-hmm.
So even
mm-hmm.
if you're not looking for new friends, you should be exposing yourself to new people whenever you can.
The next one is very interesting, Relatives as Friends. And the story is The Dance by Linda Bollett.
So we put this chapter in because so many women wrote about how they really view their daughters-in-law, their sisters, their aunts, their children as
mm-hmm.
real friends, not just as family members. And we thought that deserved a chapter because people do form very, very strong friendships with relatives, even, you know, in-laws remaining really good friends after a divorce when they're no longer officially related to each other, because they really have transcended the family relationship and become just plain friends.
Mm-hmm.
So this story is about how one of those friendships came about, and Linda Bartlett wrote it. She calls it The Dance because she describes forming a friendship with her daughter-in-law as being like a dance where they're kind of tentatively dancing back and forth with each other on the dance floor and assessing each other and learning about each other. And so she just talks about how they went from tentative dance steps together where they were deciding, you know, whether they were compatible, to really becoming friends. And after a year, Linda felt so comfortable with her daughter-in-law, and she says, "I never expected to share so much so freely. I never expected a daughter-in-law to be a friend. I never expected my life to be so enriched." And so that's really nice, that because you don't know if your son gets married. You don't know if you're going to be great friends with your daughter-in-law or not. And so this is a really wonderful reminder for women that these new family members can be great friends also and add so much richness to your life. It's good for me because I'm getting a new daughter-in-law in a few months.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. We have two children getting married in 2014.
That's super. So now
you got
all of them out of the house. You don't have to worry about it.
We just cleaned up. We just cleaned up like cabinets that hadn't been opened for 15 years that were filled with toys.
Uh-huh,
and we figured at this point we might as well just clean all the toys and keep them for the prospective grandchildren. So we're all ready.
There you go.
When the kids come and they open those cabinet doors and they see all those baby toys, they're going to be horrified because we're completely ready.
That's wonderful. At what point does a relative become a friend, do you think?
I think when you start just talking to them about things that have nothing to do with family, you know, where you just, like, you're shopping together or you're just chatting about different things and you realize you're not planning a family event, you're not talking about a family member, you're just treating her as another one of your friends. Or you want to call her up and tell her a funny story that has nothing to do with the family. I know a lot of women who are super, super good friends with their daughters-in-law, and it's a great thing.
That's wonderful. So what are some of your favorite stories and funniest stories in the book?
Well, there's one where I just burst out laughing, and I didn't even know who had written it because the name of the author was at the end. But the funny thing is it's another one by Crescent LaMonaco, who's the daughter-in-law of my friend and our editor, Barbara LaMonaco, and they're a great example of a mother and daughter-in-law becoming such good friends. But anyway, this story is about Crescent and one of her friends of her own generation. And after Crescent had her baby, she went to one of the lingerie departments, you know, at a big department store, and she was trying on some of those body shaper things, and she got completely stuck. I mean, she was completely stuck in the shaper. Her arms were straight up in the air. This horrible torture device was wrapped tightly around her arms, her head, and her upper torso. So imagine this big girdle thing is around your head, your shoulders, your arms are stuck in it, straight up in the air. You can't talk. And all she could do was cry. But her friend who was in the next changing room heard her and came in and tried to get her out of it, and they by that time they were just laughing hysterically, and I was laughing hysterically reading the story. And this is probably something that you don't get at all, Johnny, but I think other women will get this. And then another story that I thought was super funny was called The Dead Body. It's by Karen Lewis, and she hadn't really made friends with her neighbors, but she looked outside one day and she saw an old woman sitting on the porch across the street. She was just sitting in a chair on the porch. But then when she looked out again a few hours later, she realized the woman hadn't moved at all. And she thought, oh, my gosh, that old lady died on my neighbor's porch. But then her neighbor came out and was just, like, sweeping the floor around the chair and ignoring the old lady. So then this woman, Karen, who has a bit of an overactive imagination, decided that they had murdered this old lady. And so she called her husband to go and look at it. And finally she went and rang the doorbell of her neighbor's house. She was kind of embarrassed, but she went over and they answered the door with a big smile. And she said, "I'm really sorry, but I'm concerned about the woman on the porch." And she had barely finished her sentence when they burst out laughing and explained that it was a dummy that they had gotten so that their house would look occupied when they weren't home. And they had just stuck her out on the porch while they were cleaning, and then they were going to stick her back in the living room again. So anyway, that was a really funny story also. And they ended up becoming very good friends with those neighbors once they realized they weren't murderers.
Oh, being nosy in the face. I'm just kidding. That's wonderful. Why should we prioritize friend time? Because that's something that we talk about. We have to work to build relationship, friendships, and so forth. And it's very taxing sometimes. We feel like, well, it's too much. I got to give something up. Is this something that we should or should not give up? But I feel like, personally, for me, you do have to prioritize in some way. So what's your take on that?
I think it's like exercise time. You know how you have to force yourself, build the exercise into your day? I think we have to do that with friend time also, or else we're going to always put it on the back burner. It's so easy to let that slide because it seems like an indulgence, right? Seeing our friends isn't going to help our houses get cleaner, isn't going to get our kids to school, isn't going to get the bills paid, isn't going to get our work done. And so we just put it on the back burner, and we can't, because if we let it sit there on the back burner, those friends are going to drift away, and then we're going to realize we don't have any friends. And so we just have to force ourselves to make it a priority, to build it into our calendars. And you know what? If your house isn't quite as clean, it's not really going to be noticed. And by the way, if you keep it clean but you don't have any friends left, who cares, right?
Yeah, yeah. So true, very true. Do you think this book might help men forge better friendship as well?
I think so, because I think that men are probably even worse than women at working on friendship, right? Because men don't even – I think men are afraid to like meet a man who seems interesting who might be a friend and say, "Let's have lunch." They don't do that.
They don't say that
to each other. They look at each other like, huh? Like they're only comfortable interacting over like a car engine or – golf or some sport, you know, where their wives have to set the whole thing up. So I think that this book would help men, motivate them to try to find friendships also and be a little braver about reaching out to other men. It'll also help men understand that their women should prioritize finding friends and keeping friends, and maybe the men will be more supportive of their women having that girls' night out once a month or whatever it is that they need. And that will end up creating male friendships for the husbands also, because they will then meet other men through those women who are friends with their wives.
Right. We have a different perspective about friendship, I think, in some ways. It's the silliest thing. I mean, someone could buy you a drink, and before you know it, you struck up a conversation, and you have this great, wonderful time. And then on the other hand, if there's nothing to talk about in terms of business or sports or something, then no, I don't click with him.
Men need us. You need us women to help you out with this.
Yeah, you know,
we
need you all to come in and act as a buffer, the connector, the catalyst to kind of get us going.
It's true. I mean, I know how hard it is for women to make new friends or keep the friendships going, and I imagine it's three times as hard for men to do that.
It would be wonderful if y'all could do a book about just us men.
You know what? I don't think men would buy it. Or maybe women would buy it to give to the men, and then the men wouldn't read it. But I don't know. I don't think we would sell enough of them for it to be. I bet we wouldn't even get enough stories submitted. I don't know. I could try. You know, sometimes I'll do that. Sometimes I'll propose a book title and we'll start collecting stories for it just to see how many we get. And then if we don't get enough, we'll know, no, that was a bad idea. It's not going to be a popular book. I mean, that's really what happened with the New Friend Project. We realized we were making a mistake because we were getting so many stories that were about maintaining friendships you know, or the value of friends. And we weren't getting enough to make a book just on the new friend project.
Yeah.
So I bet that's what would happen with a book for men. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think men are as in tune with themselves as women are, even though, you know, we all have to improve that.
Hey, we're the new generation men now. We are sensitive, okay?
Yeah, I know. My husband says that. My husband, when he's trying to be really sensitive, he says, I think I'm now as sensitive as a woman in a coma. Like, that's a sensitive man.
That's really wonderful. What is on the horizon for Chicken Soup in 2014?
Well, we have a number of really cool new books coming out. Oh, in fact, one of them, I actually had the same experience where we suggested a title and we didn't get enough stories submitted, so we're changing the title now. We were collecting for a book to come out this fall called My Guardian Angel, and we only got about 400 submissions on that topic, which is a pretty narrow subset of the overall angel topic.
Yeah.
So we decided to go back and make it a general book about angels again so that we get our normal, you know, thousands of submissions. Because our previous angels book that came out in early 2013 is unbelievable. We're still selling something like, I don't know, 12,000 a month, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to do another angels book. So that's coming out in the fall. It's going to be called Angels in Our Midst. We also have another faith-based book coming out next week. And that's the one that has that story by Logan Eliason about being released from the cave once he prayed. Mm-hmm. And that's called Miracles Happen. We have a really cool book coming out in March for Mother's Day called The Multitasking Mom Survival Guide.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're doing a couple of books. Sometimes we do books not to make a lot of money, but to really help a sector of the population. And so we have a book coming out in April called Living with Alzheimer's and Other Dementias. We're doing that with the Alzheimer's Association. And we have a book coming out in the summer called Recovering from Traumatic Brain Injuries, because that's such a big topic these days, so important. So we're doing a lot of interesting books for the rest of this year. And then our food, our comfort food, is rolling out nationwide. It's getting great reviews. The food is fabulous. And our pet food has just been relaunched in new packaging. There's a story on the back of every package because we don't want you to get a Chicken Soup for the Soul project without getting a story also. So there's a great story about dogs or cats on every package. So we're very busy. Lots of great stuff is going on here.
Fantastic. We're coming close to the end of the hour. So since our show is about people, family, and living life, and I know you've given us some wonderful recipes for living in the past, do you have a great recipe for living in terms of building friendships and strengthening relationships for us this morning?
I do, and these would apply to men and women. I have 5 tips for helping make great friends. And one tip, and this we talked about over and over in these stories, is don't be afraid to reach out. And then another tip is your first impression may be wrong. You know, we've talked about how you might look at somebody as not being your kind of person, and you might be wrong, and that person might have the potential to be a fabulous friend. Another tip is get out of your comfort zone. You can find friends doing new and adventurous things, and it's such a good thing to do anyway, to do something you're afraid of. It's a really great idea. Another tip is say yes to adventure. Like, one of the ways to build a friendship and to really bond with your friends is do something new and different with them. And then you have this shared experience, and that really deepens your friendship. And then finally, and we didn't talk about this earlier in this hour, is you can say goodbye to a bad friendship. You only have so much time available for your friends. Don't be afraid to take someone off your list and make room for someone else who really adds value to your life. It's okay. It's okay to prune, to weed the garden of your life, and to eliminate people who aren't adding value and happiness to your life, and to put new people into that garden of your life.
That's just wonderful. Amy, thank you for the great recipe for living about building friendships and maintaining relationships. and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Dr. Catherine Prim. She is the owner and chief veterinarian at Applewood Animal Hospital in Ottawa, Tennessee. Dr. Prim and I will be discussing about the amazing world of pets and their owners, which she revealed in her 2013 award-winning memoir, Tennessee Tales, Pets and Their People. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Amy, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again. Have a blessed day and see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Johnny. Bye.